nuking hell.
Going to the railing, she leaned over, her glorious cleavage on display. She flashed some to make them happy.
Ah, yeah, baby.
She then closed her robe, cinching the belt tight.
Sue-Ann?
Yeah?
I'm going to the dock for a minute. You're in charge till I come back.
Her straggly hair in wild disarray, the slut slowed in her work while staring thoughtfully at the excited older woman. Half, she mouthed silently. Expecting that, the madam nodded agreement and rushed down the stairs and into the muddy streets, heading straight for the front gate of the ville. Stepping outside the post office, Christie looked over Cold Harborville while the guards on either side of the door dropped their cigs and snapped to attention.
Evening, Baron.
The woman walked past the sack men, wrinkling her nose at the thick smells in the night air. The ville was ablaze with crackling torches and fish oil lanterns. In the flickering yellow light, chickens ran wild along the dirt streets, and a group of mangy dogs tormented a squealing pig wallowing in a mud hole. Swarms of flies buzzed thick around a public latrine, and the houses were ramshackle pre-dark buildings, badly fixed with banana leaves and bamboo. Most had no glass in the windows, and only a few possessed doors of any kind. In the street, a hooting crowd was gathered around two sack men having a slow-motion fistfight, while naked children ran about screaming, and a woman openly relieved herself in the weeds along a blacksmith shop. On the corner was the local gaudy house, filled with a riot of partially clad people having sex in every possible combination. Then a sack man stuck his head out a window and retched into the street, almost drenching some folks hurrying by. Only the dimly seen silhouettes of the guards walking along the top of the brick wall had a semblance of order.
Mother Gaia. It's a drunken pest hole.
That's because it's not their ville. The kitchen staff told me that the original builders of the place got aced by a plague. These folks found it empty and moved in.
That explains a lot. You build something, you take care of it.
Christie's hair flared in anger.
You, where's the vault?
Behind the palace. Here, I'll show you.
Stay. I know the way.
Sure.
Stepping over the defensive sandbags, the companion started along the main street, dodging revelers and pools of ripe offal.
Whole ville must be drunk in celebration. Great time for us to be attacked.
I know. And it's not booze. They don't know how to make it.
Shh! Not know how to make shine? Stoops.
There we agree, my taciturn friend.
Dark night. We'll have to start from scratch to make the juice we need. Be trapped here for weeks.
So, what is it they're drunk on? Jolt?
No. Some local herb called rock. They chew it or make tea. Gets them high enough, but it's not wolfweed or marijuana. Nothing I've run across before. Some local mutation. Harmless enough.
A sudden movement made her pull a blaster, and then a man staggered from the shadows with his pants around his ankles and holding a panting woman to his chest. Her dress unbuttoned to the point where her sagging breasts bounced freely. Arms wrapped around his neck, legs around his waist, she gave little jumps as he steadily hiccuped and fed her sips of some fluid from a striped gourd.
If taken in small doses. Damn, an entire ville hooked on drugs.
Following the sandbag wall, the companions reached a quiet area behind the palace. Nobody was singing or dancing there, and it was obvious why. The area was ringed by a series of short poles with human skulls balanced on top. A row of crosses with skeletons tied to the crossbars gave mute testimony of public executions. There was a series of sharp metal poles, bones scattered below, a skeleton impaled halfway down on the thick shaft, the pole entering between his legs and exiting out his gaping mouth. Nearby was a shallow pit with the ground blackened from flames, a fresh new stake standing in the middle, waiting for the next victim. A complex collection of rusty iron pipes formed a sort of dome, and hung inside the kindergarten jungle gym was a series of tiny iron cages, more dead jammed inside, some still possessing faces, one prisoner's arm extended through the bars, clawing for freedom. Fat seagulls roosted on the cages and pecked for tidbits of rotting meat from the decaying corpses. Nobody spoke as they passed the killing field. It wasn't the first they'd seen, nor would it be the last.
There's the armory.
A group of SEC men charged around the palace, their weapons at the ready.
You there! Name!
Sergeant Arnstein, Baron!
Take your squad and shut the Ville down. No more parties. In one candle of time, I want the streets cleared and everybody sent home. Use the Gaudy House as your base to coordinate everything. There's a lot to do tomorrow, and I don't want the entire population too exhausted to work.
They were in charge of the Gaudy House? Armstein tried to hide his pleasure at the news, while the other SEC men openly grinned and nudged each other.
It will be done, Baron. Anything else?
Get moving. We're going to do an inventory of the armory. And remember, you have only one candle. Do not fail me, Sergeant.
Yes, sir!
This Armstein gushed loyalty to the woman as he and the squad started off at a brisk run.
They'll go straight to the Gaudy House, kick everybody else out, then grab a quick one.
Which will keep them busy until tomorrow. If we're going to be here for a while, got to find some way to win their loyalty.
You have it already. It's only us they want to chill.
I was going to use SEC men to make black powder, but maybe I'll use the slaves instead. Less chance of any trouble.
From pirates?
Under a death sentence anyway. But if they can escape with the formula, be rich enough to buy a Ville.
Or a new ship. Yeah, smart. The slaves won't try anything until they know what to do. Then they'll try to escape. Makes sense.
Trader always used to say that the only person you can really trust is an enemy with a hand in your mag.
Got that right.
As the companions finally turned and walked away, the circling seagulls eagerly descended in a flock upon the jungle gym and began to continue their interrupted meal. In the golden illumination of the lanterns, the armory could be seen as a stout brick building, with rusty nails sticking out of the mortar between the bricks like porcupine quills. The door was formed of wooden planks held together with iron bands, and two guards stood outside, holding bolt-action rifles, not flintlocks. Ryan spotted another man on the roof who was trying to stay out of sight. That guard carried a sawed-off shotgun and a brace of revolvers. The guards snapped to attention as Christie came forward. One was a lanky man with a goatee, the other short and seemingly made of solid muscle. Both sported a lot of scars and had the neutral expressions of cold hearts. Exactly the sort any smart baron would use to protect the blasters. Men like these couldn't be bullied or bribed. They were just waiting for trouble to arrive so they could use their fancy blasters.
Door.
Yes, Baron Roth.
A bearded guard fumbled at his belt and rushed to unlock the door. Shouldering his blaster, he pushed open the door.
Here, Baron.
He reached into a box on the ground and extracted a lantern. He lit it with a glowing piece of bamboo from the flame of his own lantern and gave it to her.
You'll need this. No windows inside, or lanterns either.
Smart. Thank you.
Christie accepted the light and went inside. The others followed, with Ryan going in last.
Fucking outlanders.
What was that?
I said fuck you, outlander. Can't stand you hangers-on. She's the Baron, and you're just some leech sucking on her ass. Baron gives the word, and you're all in a cage. Should just chill you right now.
Go for it.
Later. Any time.
The one-eyed warrior walked backward into the building, never taking his eye off them. Once inside, Ryan rammed the interior bolts home.
From now on, we travel in pairs. Nobody goes anywhere alone. The locals are itching to replace us as the Baron's bodyguards.
Definitely using the slaves.
Lit only by the one lantern, the armory was masked in heavy shadows, but they could still see that the walls were made of a different color brick than those outside, so there were probably two layers of brick, maybe three. It would be extremely difficult for anybody trying to break in. And the floor was composed of slabs of sidewalk concrete. Ryan thumped a boot heel down hard and heard only a muffled thump of solid rock.
Whoever built the bunker knew what they were doing. The original builders must have disassembled a city to make this place.
I'll bet they had plans to do the streets, too, before they died.
Makes sense.
To the left side were racks of long blasters lining the brown brick wall. To the right was a quadruple row of hand flintlocks. Barrels of black powder were stacked on bricks to keep them away from any water in case of heavy rain, and buckets of white sand hung from brass hooks attached to the brick column supporting the ceiling, crude protection against a fire. In the middle of the room was a ship's cannon, set in a wall of sandbags, a fuse sticking out of the glory hole, the big muzzle pointing straight for the front door.
In case of attack, triple stoop. The concussion would deafen, if not kill, everybody in the room.
Unless there's another way out of here.
Ryan moved among the barrels, wrapping them with a gun butt and listening for echoes. Along the back wall was another door and several long tables. One held a small brazier, bullet molds, and a lot of miscellaneous lead, some misshapen lumps streaked with brown.
They dug the bullets out of the dead to reclaim the lead. Grisly, but efficient.
War is a nightmare, and we are but the dreamers.
The other table was covered with pieces of flint and cigar boxes. Christie lifted a lid and found steel chisels nestled on a bed of fragrant leaves. Curious. She lifted a piece to briefly inspect it, then felt the oil on her fingertips. It was to ward off rust. Not total fools, then.
Oh, crap. We have vault.
Moving from table to table, Jack glanced briefly at the collection of crude blasters before moving on. There was nothing here of any use that he could see. The back door was heavy wood bolted in a zigzag pattern to more wood, but it proved to be unlocked. The next room was a lot smaller, containing small barrels of assorted pieces of blasters for repairs, coils of cannon fuse, and more buckets of sand. There was also a third door, but this was made of burnished metal, its seamless expanse unmarred. There was a combination dial and a swing lever. The hinges, if any, weren't readily located.
Stolen from a bank, I'd wager.
Where's the black powder and shot for the wall cannons? Don't tell me the Ville is completely unarmed.
There are four more places like this, spaced along the outer wall. Shot's too heavy to move fast. You have to keep it close to the cannons.
What do you think, John?
Give it a try.
J.B. started running his hands over the door. No warm spots. Then he swept it with his compass. The needle never wavered. No mag fields, even better. The rest of his tools were in his backpack, rusting at the bottom of the harbor. Salt water would ruin his collection of munitions, and he had no idea what it would do to his prized timing pencils. The C4 should be okay, but everything else was most likely dissolving while they waited for daylight. Placing his ear to the cool metal, J.B. held his breath as he slowly turned the dial, listening for any clicks. Having seen this before, the companion stayed still and made as little noise as possible. Sometimes the doors opened easily, but that was only because of something on the other side that wanted out.
Couldn't try this last time, Christie. Guards wouldn't leave us alone.
The original 10-second tour, then a most improprietous bum's rush.
Ah! Well, well, well.
Anything you can't open?
Not yet.
Keeping the scattergun in his grip, J.B. tried pulling the door open, then pushing, but it refused to budge. Chewing a lip, the wiry man attempted to shove it sideways, and the massive portal slid easily on greased tracks out of sight into the wall. Beyond was dark tunnel that angled into the ground. The floor was metal grating, the smooth concrete sides rising to curve overhead.
Blasted sewer pipe.
Head straight for the palace. Vault my ass. It's the Baron's secret entrance to the armory.
Could be.
Ryan inspected the walls and ceiling with the lantern. In the tight confines of the tunnel, the meager light was magnified to a much brighter level.
Single file, 1 yard spread. I'm on point. Jack, cover the rear.
As the companions entered the tunnel, Jack rolled over the barrel of spare blaster parts and placed it directly in front of the bank door, hopefully forcing it to stay open. Checking the load on his blaster, the teenager then followed the rest into the pre-dark sewer. The air was stale and slightly cold. Side openings for feeder pipes had been cemented shut, water trickling through tiny cracks and going down under the flooring. Every 10 yards or so, there were stacked bricks bracing the arched ceiling, moss edging the brick as it followed the path of the descending moisture.
Must be under a stream.
Or the fountain.
A gentle curve in the tunnel exposed stairs going up, and Ryan automatically stopped. The place was perfect for a booby trap. He looked hard at the darkness, and there was something different. The moss lining the bricks here was a lighter shade than the rest. Testing it with a finger, he found it was dry and long dead. Easing the panga from its sheath, he gingerly pried away a piece and exposed a narrow slit.
Trap.
Immediately, Mildred clicked her flashlight, and the passageway was brightly illuminated by white light. Now they could see a piece of thin yellow twine stretched across the passageway, the color of the string almost identical to the illumination coming from the smelly fish oil lanterns.
Use their own lanterns to hide the twine.
Ryan ran his hands along the taut length.
Damn. It's attached to the pin of a gren. Yellow-striped. Woolly Pete.
White phosphorus? Leave it be, in case of company.
Good idea. Mildred, keep the light on it.
Right.
Everybody stay sharp going over.
Carefully, the companion stepped over the trigger mechanism while Ryan checked ahead for more traps. That was the only one found. Hopefully, the only one there was. Proceeding up the cinder block stairs at a crawl, he reached the top and another banded door. Langford hadn't missed a trick. Checking it for traps, Ryan then slid his knife into the jamb and depressed the spring bolt. A push, and the door swung open easily. Beyond was a large room, bookshelves full of volumes lining the walls, and large steamer trucks arranged in neat rows along the carpeted floor. The glass flue of a lantern hanging from the ceiling reflected the light of their own lantern, throwing distorted shadows everywhere.
Bastard maze.
Books! I'll start the lantern.
Cradling the lantern, Mildred raised the flue and lit it with her butane lighter. The stubby wick ignited with a clear blue flame, and bright white light flooded the room. J.B. grabbed the lantern away. Quickly, he yanked up the flue and turned down the wick until it died.